How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Celtics fans, welcome to the Rain and Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales along with Jay King. And Jay, too bad we had a boring game last night or else we'd have something to talk about.
Yeah, like it really is going to be a bad episode after that really, really boring game.
Ugh, I mean, overtime. Who wants to see teams score almost 300 points combined?
I was interested to see whether you were going to do the math right. And then you just decided to just skip it altogether.
Well, I started and I stopped. I think, I swear, with these games, the way they've been going recently for the Celtics, I feel like I've zoned out and they've played some mysterious fifth period with how much they've been scoring, because the end of third quarter scores have been basically what used to be final game scores. 139 points. Granted, it was overtime, but still, 139 points last night. 128 against the Kings. They've been scoring well over 100 since basically the beginning of 2016. Granted, now their defense has gone away a little bit. They've been giving up a lot of points. I don't know what's happened there, Jay, but they're winning.
They are winning. And, I mean, their offense is all the way up to the top 10, where a month ago, it was lagging in the 20s. Looked like it would be, you know, their big flaw this whole season. And since then, they've just really surged offensively. It's been crazy. And that Clippers game was just like, who didn't play well? That was just an unbelievable offensive performance from them. Isaiah Thomas finishing over DeAndre Jordan. Your boy Turner. Coming through again in the clutch. He's become a fourth quarter and in last night's case, overtime killer. It's unbelievable to see what has happened to this team that for so long couldn't score with Isaiah Thomas on the bench and now just kind of doesn't really stop scoring.
I will give Evan Turner credit. Even in the Milwaukee game, which was, I'm sure nobody really wants to hear about, but the Milwaukee game where everybody just kind of, we went back to the old, Olynyk couldn't shoot, length gave everybody problems, Evan Turner was terrible, until the fourth quarter, and they made that huge run to eliminate that 19-point deficit, Turner was really good in that fourth quarter. So there is almost literally nothing bad that you can say about this team right now.
Do you like Evan Turner now? Are you an Evan Turner fanboy?
I'm going to his jersey retirement ceremony. I bought tickets.
Everyone's going to his jersey retirement.
Yeah, I'm camping out. I'm going to have him autograph. We're going to hang out. We're going to have beers together.
Yeah, I'm.
No, he's playing really well, and he's had that opportunity to revert to the things that were going to piss me off, but he redeemed himself at the end of the Milwaukee game, and he had another big game. He is in a groove, as are the rest of the Celtics, and there's really very little that you can say negatively about the Celtics, because even if somebody has a bad day, they tend to bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Tyler Zeller, who, although he got destroyed by Greg Monroe, their whole team got destroyed by Greg Monroe, just got ruined. They sent doubles. They single-teamed him. They tried everything against Monroe. They switched. He just tortured them the whole night. That was like watching the 2014 Celtics. I can remember, like, Stevens' first year when they had a really bad team and they just got killed in the paint every game. That felt just like those years all over again. But they respond. They score more points in the paint than the Los Angeles Clippers, who have DeAndre Jordan. That was mostly because Isaiah Thomas is just a ridiculous finisher. Some of the finishes, he was 9 for 13 inside the restricted area. He is 5'9". 5'9", 9 for 13. That's like he was finishing like Andre Drummond, you know? like that's the percentages he was finishing at. And he couldn't post me up, but actually he probably could post me up.
Hold on for a second.
I probably got a little too inflated of an ego there. I'm 6'2" though. I feel like as long as he was limited to one dribble and couldn't, if he was back to the basket, I don't know. I'm not sure.
No, I know.
But yeah,
he would have to be tied down in those chains that they use to dock boats.
Yeah. He'd have to be in a straight jacket or something to not score on me.
Look, you can, you know, you're a shooter, you're a gunner. Your defensive rating's pretty high though.
You know, yeah. Let's not talk about my defense. Nobody wants to talk about my defense. Let's talk about that Clippers game, because that was one of the craziest games in a while. I mean, the Clippers played well. The Clippers, J.J. Redick, who I think the last thing I would ever want to do on a basketball court is guard J.J. Redick. You just run around screens, and you never stop sprinting. And then finally he gets a sliver of space, and he drills a jumper in your face, or he draws a foul. Avery Bradley has got to stop committing bad fouls, which is weird. He never had an issue with that until the last two games, but he's committed now the one, obviously, against Milwaukee, against Chris Middleton in the final second that lost that game, although their third quarter really lost it. And then two in the overtime period against Redick behind the three-point arc.
Yeah.
Just some really bad fouls from Avery Bradley. But back to the game. Just craziness. Hectic craziness. But Paul Pierce's, maybe his final return to the TD Garden, got lost in the shuffle because the game was so unbelievable. I was lucky enough. I sat next to Bob Ryan for the game. And Bob Ryan, who, first of all, he's one of my idols, absolute legend. Someone who completely took basketball sports writing to a new level, just changed the game all by himself. He was so excited to see Bob Ryan. He was like a kid. Like, the excitement level that he has for basketball is unbelievable. It was so cool to sit there next to him watching a great game and seeing how damn excited he was for everything. It was unbelievable to see a guy his age. I don't know exactly how old he is, but obviously he's retired from the Boston Globe. Like, he's getting up there in years. Just so much excitement, so much energy, and just loved seeing good basketball. It was awesome. Awesome, awesome to sit next to him.
I can only imagine what that's like. I mean, Bob Ryan is basically the gold standard of basketball writing. In Boston.
Yeah, and I mean, to sit next to him at any time, like, he's just the greatest basketball resource ever. He could probably tell you who started in the 1974 finals and every box score, like, statistic from the whole series. But to sit next to him in that game and just to see his energy level, it was unbelievable. Like, it was really like watching it with, like, a 12-year-old kid who had just fallen in love with the game. And, like, he was just next level excited. And it was so cool to see. It was so awesome.
Well, it was an amazing game. You had – I'm looking at the box score here. There are four different 30-plus points totals in these quarters. The first quarter was 37-33 L.A. The Celtics put up 38 points in the second quarter. Clippers put up 31 points in the fourth. So many points. Chris Paul, that stretch in the third quarter, he was unconscious. I think he just ran out of gas. He played almost 48 minutes in that game.
Yeah, that was incredible. The incredible part about that was he reached like some other level, like just a level of point guardness that only Stephen Curry reaches. And then by the end of the game, Isaiah Thomas had a better game. Like,
yeah,
the two point guard games that we saw, I think what did Paul have? 35, 13, and two turnovers. And Thomas had 36, 11, and one turnover. The two outrageous games from those guys. And they did it in such different ways. Paul was like all jumpers. And Thomas was just like, I'm going to attack DeAndre Jordan in the paint. I don't care that he's 15 inches taller than I am. I'm going to loft shots over him all game. It was two guys playing the game completely differently, and they had almost the exact same impact on the game. That was an incredible, incredible duel, even though they didn't always guard each other.
Yeah, no. What I've noticed with Isaiah Thomas going against these bigger guys, he creates space by kind of burying his shoulder into the bigger guy's core, and that keeps the center, that keeps like DeAndre Jordan from jumping, because DeAndre Jordan could probably pick a quarter off the top of the backboard. He can jump. But when Thomas kind of pushes his shoulder into his core there, kind of gets him a little off balance. He can't really jump the way he normally does, and then Thomas kind of uses that push to kind of fade away, and he just creates just enough space to throw that ball up there, and he's been doing that for so long, lofting those little shots, like you say, up over people. He creates just enough space to get that up there. It's amazing how he's gotten that little move to work, and it's incidental contact. He's not pushing off or anything like that. He's just using his body. He's actually using his small size to his advantage by getting his shoulder down into a place where a bigger guy can't do anything about it and creating that little space. It's just amazing. You see it happening live, and you just see Isaiah Thomas disappear into this mass of humanity. And then the ball just pops up out of nowhere, and it goes through the hoop, and then he's sliding halfway across the baseline. It's fun. Sometimes I get a little worried, but it's fun to watch him do it.
I think one thing people probably don't – two things people probably don't talk about enough. One, his strength. To be that strong, to throw your body into people like he does and still finish is incredible. And two, his balance. He hits people, and he still maintains that balance in midair. The body control, the balance, everything. Like, he is a special, special type of athlete, and obviously really skilled. And obviously he does so many things well to succeed and be an all-star at 5'9". But a lot of the times you take that for granted. It's just like, oh, yeah, Isaiah Thomas is finishing at the rim again. But he was so next level against the Clippers in that way. That just, I mean, it was stunning to see. And then, of course, at the end of regulation, they're down two, and he finds DeAndre Jordan guarding him one more time, step back jumper, drains it, go to overtime, and Evan Turner, your boy Evan Turner, takes over. Yet again, Evan Turner has, what is he? He's won like four or five games for them down the stretch lately. He's been
really important. He has been really important. And not just like last night.
He was guarding Chris Paul, too, by the way, when Paul kind of went away. He was doing everything. He was really, really good in that overtime.
When he's had these games, like last night, obviously, you have that obvious clutch where he's in the overtime, scoring points in the overtime. What do you have, 7 in OT, which is huge. When you score half your points in overtime to win a game, that's everybody looks at it and says, wow, that's clutch. But Evan Turner has had some pretty clutch moments earlier in games where I think it was the home game against Orlando where they were starting to make a run, and he just kept hitting these shots midway through the fourth quarter to keep them at 10 points away. And those are clutch shots too. because that prevents the other team from really getting that confidence, that feeling that they're going to finish off the run that they're trying to make. They say every team in the NBA makes a run, and teams are, they get down big because that's a tendency, if you, especially these lesser teams, you can get down big against the Celtics. And sometimes the Celtics will relax and let teams back in. They'll settle for jumpers and whatever. But Turner has done in this stretch, he's hit those shots, those little mid-range shots, or that right block post up against a smaller guard where he spins baseline and hits that little jumper. And he's done those to keep them at bay, to keep them from cutting the lead to under 10 and from really, really feeling like they're going to be back in the game. So giving Turner all the credit in the world, he's played extremely well, and he's hit big shots at big moments for the Celtics. They would not have been on this run, 10 of 12, without Evan Turner.
The 180.
Yes, I just said that.
The 180 you've done on Evan Turner this year has been incredible. I mean, I think we had a full episode basically dedicated to Evan Turner ranting earlier this season.
Right, but at that point, he deserved it. Did he not?
Probably not quite as hard as you gave it to him.
That was warranted. He was playing like crap.
Probably not.
That was warranted.
One guy who I do want to talk about, it feels like we don't talk about him a lot, Jared Sullinger.
I was just going to bring him
Jared,
up because he had a great game last night.
Yeah, and it 21, number, 10, and
he
7.
Was three assists shy of a triple-double.
21, 10, and 7. Some of the box outs where he didn't even get the rebounds, it was like DeAndre Jordan was not touching that ball. And Sullinger, you know, last season, it kind of felt like his career almost, this might be dramatic, it kind of felt like his career was at a crossroads. You know, he gained weight during the season. He had the foot injury, stress fracture. He kind of just had plateaued. And to me, he's taken a big step forward in consistency this year. And sometimes he'll still shoot too many long jumpers, whether it's threes, he hasn't taken many of those lately, or long twos. But he does a lot of good things. And I think he's really kind of stabilized his career and started it back on the right track. I still think he needs to get in better shape, but he's had a really good season. He's been really important defensively and on the glass. And we probably haven't talked about his importance enough, but he does a lot of good things for them. He produces in a lot of ways for them that sometimes I think a lot of people don't appreciate, because it's Isaiah scoring and it's Evan Turner in the clutch and it's Avery Bradley with huge first quarters. But Sullinger does a lot of things for them that other guys on the team can't do. He is their best post defender. He is their best rebounder. He's very, very good at not turning the basketball over and making smart decisions when he passes. So shout out to Jared Sullinger, who has quietly put his career back on track this season and really showed the promise that he showed earlier in his career, I think.
And there's nobody on the team that's better than Jared Sullinger making a play while falling down or while already on his ass.
He is good at that. He is very good at that. And outlet passes, he's great outlet pass. I love – he might be the second best outlet passer in the league behind Kevin Love.
Whoa.
I mean, I don't know who else is out there really, but he's a really good outlet passer. And he's almost always on the money. I can remember he threw one like 5 feet ahead of the guy and it went out of bounds. And I was shocked. Like, what?
Yeah.
Sullinger missed an outlet pass? That's really weird. So shout out to Sullinger. We don't talk about him enough, but he's got his career back on track. And he's hitting mid-range jumpers now. He's shooting a lot better from that range than he was previously this season. And he's almost eliminated the three.
He has. Yeah. Well, he's been very much more judicious about taking the three, which is great. And I feel like those mid-range shots are a little closer to the hoop. Maybe that's just my eyes. I haven't looked at the shot charts or anything like that. I feel like he's gone from 22 footers to 19 footers, and that extra few feet make a difference. So that might just be me seeing the good things, the shots that are going in. I feel like he might have moved it in a little bit.
Yeah. From more of a macro perspective, like we've talked about individual players a lot. I've been really interested by what opposing coaches are starting to say about the Celtics. George Karl was in last week. Earlier this week, whatever it was when the Kings were here in Boston. And he said, I think they have a chance against Cleveland. Doc Rivers, at his old home last night, he says, I think they could make a run. People are starting to give them respect. They're starting to look at the Celtics like, man, that team plays hard every night. They're never out of a game. They've knocked off the Cavs. Now they've knocked off the Clippers. They're a good team. And I think Brian Robb of Celtics Hub tweeted this after the game last night. They're one of six teams now, or five or six teams in the top 10 in both offense and defense, which that's a recipe for success. You know, I don't know. I don't think they can win the Eastern Conference. I'm not that delusional, but other than Cleveland and Toronto's quietly really good this year. They might not be on Toronto's level, but I'd give them a shot against Toronto in the playoffs. Like, we've talked about this before. They probably have Eastern Conference Finals. Like, that's their ceiling. And they're starting to play more like their ceiling, I guess. And every coach that comes in, every single coach, it's like they're reading off a script. Man, I love the way that team plays. They share the ball. They play so hard, so much energy. Brad Stevens, one of the best coaches in the league, so good. like literally every coach is given a script before meeting the Boston media about what they have to say about the Celtics. And it's the same exact thing every single game. And that's kind of who they are. And it's like they're these plucky overachievers. And they kind of are. But I think also it's just a lot of guys being given opportunities that they never had before. Isaiah Thomas was never looked to as a go-to guy. Jay Crowder never had as much opportunity. Evan Turner had never been given that much freedom at the end of a game. And it's just a lot of guys kind of rising to the opportunity. And they play hard, man. That team plays hard. Even like offensive cuts and stuff, like they cut so hard. Every set, crisp, ball movement, good. And those are the signs of a well-coached team. And they're really coming together these last few weeks.
Well, it's amazing that they would play so hard for such a hothead coach. did you see him last night? See him on the sidelines?
That was peak,
losing
peak
his
mad
damn
Brad.
Mind.
Peak mad Brad.
I loved it. That was so great. After Jarebko bowled over Chris Paul, which, by the way, was an amazingly smart play
by Chris Paul.
People were screaming it was a flop and whatever, but just at the spur of the moment to make that play, that's pretty brilliant. And Doc, even on the sidelines, was looking at Brad and says, "That's smart shit." That's literally what he said.
Yeah.
But Brad turned around, hand on his head, gave Jay Larinaga a look like, did that just happen?
Yeah, that was amazing. Hysterical.
And then the foul on Crowder, where he lost his mind. He literally said, "That's bullshit. Are you fucking kidding me?" Brad Stevens.
Yep. Brad unreal. Stevens. Brad Stevens. Hothead. Brad Stevens.
Hothead coach. How can this team play for a guy who flies off the handle like that at clutch moments?
Yeah, I don't know how they keep their composure when they have such an animal on the sidelines.
It's so funny because that did nothing but endear him more to Celtics fandom. Like, we finally saw milquetoast Brad Stevens, gosh darn it, even keel, celebrated the Cleveland the Cleveland game winner like he was a statue, all of a sudden flying off the handle, losing his mind, all of this emotion, and people were like, he's human. That was amazing. People loved that moment. I loved that moment. I thought it was hilarious.
What's the funniest is that, like, that is stuff every other coach does every single game. You know, like if Doc Rivers gets caught doing that, no one bats an eye. Everyone's like, oh yeah, that's just a natural reaction after a bad call or a stupid play by one of his players. When Brad does it, it's like, what is going on? Like,
the earth is shifting, like, on its axis.
Yeah, like it's midnight and there's sunshine everywhere. Like, what is going on? Like, just
so awesome.
Just so out of character and so funny. And it's great when they catch Brad in those human moments that you don't see from him too often.
No. Or the cameras don't care. I'm sure he has some of them, or it's not as pronounced, but man, that was great. But the fact is, going back to the serious conversation, that of course it's a very well coached team. And it just goes to show preparation. Going back to the Milwaukee game, that alley-oop to Kelly Olynyk, so perfectly drawn, understanding everything that's going on. They're switching on everything. This is what you need to do. This is where these guys need to go, drawing up the whole play. And it's the second time that he's drawn up a last-second lob play where there's nobody between the player and the basket. The first one was the Jay Crowder. What game was that where Jay Crowder caught that lob pass?
Washington Wizards.
There you go.
That was one where Crowder and Randy Whitman were beefing.
Yes, yes. Last second play, all of a sudden, the ball is in the air, and there's a Celtic and the basket and no opponent between them. To do that twice in a season, that's not luck. That's knowing what the opponent is going to do. That's preparation, and it's good execution. And this is the important part of that.
Yeah, you.
Other players see that.
Yep.
They know. Free agents know that when they come to Boston, they're going to play for a guy who's prepared and knows what the other team is doing. And that is really important to free agents, big and small. That is a huge reason. It's not that Brad's a nice guy, or he may be a player's coach or anything. It's a guy that's prepared, and you know when you get out there and you're a multimillionaire, it's up to the players to basically allow a coach to coach them. And when Brad Stevens is telling you to do something, you're going to do it. And that is a really important aspect to all of this.
Yeah, everybody notices what he's doing. And he's doing it now for a team that's getting good. Like, they're number three. They entered the All-Star break number three in the Eastern Conference. And what's interesting is, obviously, who knows what will happen at the trade deadline. They will target upgrades big and upgrades small and see what happens. But they'll have cap space this summer. And Stevens is a drawing card. I really do think he's a drawing card. I talked to Jared Dudley after hearing him on the Zach Lowe podcast saying that everyone is just raving about Brad Stevens. There's a legitimate buzz about Brad Stevens in the NBA and about how good he is and about how elite he is at putting guys in positions to succeed. And Dudley told me it's even – the players even like that, how he treats rest, how he doesn't – how he tries not to play guys huge minutes, how he has moved back the shoot around from morning to afternoon at home. Those are things that players care about. Like, those are things we don't even think about. We don't care about rest like that. Like, guy plays big minutes, like, yeah, sure, maybe he'll get run down. But we don't really talk about that often. But players do, and they care about that. They want to go somewhere where they're going to be kept fresh, where the coach knows what he's doing with everything from rest to X's and O's. And Stevens is getting that reputation, and Literally, it's unbelievable to hear guys praise him when they come through. Everybody goes out of their way to say how good a coach Brad Stevens is. And that team, you know, 32-23, third place in the Eastern Conference. What's interesting to me is, you know, a few years ago, not a few years ago now, a lot of years, makes me feel kind of old. 9 years ago now, I guess, before they traded for Kevin Garnett, they were in such a different place. 24-58, like Ainge was ready to swing for the fences. He didn't have, like, there was nothing he was risking. Now it's like they're third in the Eastern Conference. They have a lot of good young players. They have a core that isn't great yet, but starting to get good. And a probable top five pick from Brooklyn, he would probably have to be pretty enticed. It would have to be a pretty safe move, I would guess, at this trade deadline to make a big move, because they're in a good spot right now. They can go with a team that's probably going to finish in the top four or five in the Eastern Conference, and then add a top five pick to that core, have some salary cap flexibility. Like, they're in a really good spot right now. You can have the patience to wait for that deal, because you are, like, they're in a good spot. Obviously, a lot of their big men could be free agents. Jared Sullinger, Tyler Zeller, Amir Johnson could be, depending on what the Celtics do with his team option. But, like, they're in a really good spot right now. And that puts Ainge, I think that gives him a lot of leverage heading into the trade deadline, because he doesn't need to make a move. He's got all the assets, but he doesn't need to use them if he doesn't want to.
I remember talking a couple years ago, I think at this point, once the trade was made, you start extrapolating out the scenarios. And the best case scenario we were looking at, well, these guys develop and this guy develops, and you make a move here or there, and you go into 2016 as a playoff team, and you still have that Brooklyn pick. And at that point, Brooklyn was good. And we say, well, you know, Pierce and Garnett go away, they retire, something happens, you can start to see the downfall. And wouldn't you know it, the best case scenario is unfolding. And that's a huge testament to Danny Ainge, but it's also a little bit of luck that...
I would say a lot of luck.
That, look, Brooklyn is so inept that they still, first of all, the trade deadline is, what, a week away?
Literally 1 week.
In 1 week, the potential flurry of game-changing, franchise-changing moves will be made. They do not have a general manager in place.
The best part about that is that I've seen reports saying that they still intend to hire someone before the trade deadline. So someone is going to, like, walk in off the streets and be in charge of making the decision whether they trade somebody, keep somebody, whatever. It's bonkers. Absolutely bonkers.
I just heard Howard Beck, Bleacher Report, talking today. The Brooklyn Nets do not intend to trade Brook Lopez. They do not intend to trade Thaddeus Young. They
Why risk a good thing, John?
To keep this core together, this core that has won 14 games this year, they're looking to build around it. And I think they expect to just pay for some free agents and be back in the mix. That's how bad Brooklyn is.
They're in a weird place, though. I will give them, they're in a weird place because they've already given away all their picks. Like, not this year, next year, 2018, they do not have control of their picks. So, like, you almost, like, what's the point of trading those guys? And then you get bad, and then maybe you get, like, other draft
picks
for them.
The point is to get some picks.
You have to
now, this is, I mean, nuclear option. that the play for Brooklyn, which I'm glad they're not doing it.
But that means like playing for like 4 years ahead. It's tough to be like, okay, we are now going to play for 4 years ahead. I think they have like a pipe dream in their heads where they have $40 million in cap space or whatever it is this summer, and they use that to at least become respectable. I think that's their pipe dream. And
I think the way you do it is you trade Brook Lopez for something serviceable and a couple of first round draft picks, and you find a way to get a first round pick or a first and some seconds or something like that for Thaddeus Young. And you get back into this year's draft, you get into next year's draft, and you start replenishing the stuff, all of the stuff that you gave away, and just burn it to the ground. Burn it to the ground and start completely fresh, and maybe be the worst team ever the next year or two.
Please, now, says Danny Ainge. Please be the worst team ever the next year or two.
I think either way, it's beneficial to the Celtics. But the best thing that they can do is be where they are now. They win like 20-something games. So what? But anyway, that's whatever it is, the best-case scenario is essentially playing out for the Boston Celtics. And so, let's just enjoy it.
Yeah. You know what I thought was an interesting trade rumor was the one about Shabazz Muhammad. Because
yes,
a lot of these
and
other
we got
guys,
a question about
a
that.
Lot of these other guys are like bigger names. Go ahead with the question. We'll shout out the.
Well, the question comes from at RLS003, who says, "What do you make of the Shabazz Muhammad rumor to Boston? Is it classic trader Danny?" So that, go ahead.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting because all these other guys, you know, Al Horford, Dwight Howard, which didn't seem like the talks were substantial at all, Danilo Gallinari, all those other guys are established names. And then Muhammad is like mediocre player on a bad team. And that was kind of like one of the type of moves I think Danny Ainge could possibly make, because if you look at his track record, obviously he tried to overpay for Justice Winslow. He threw a ton of his assets, tried to get Justice Winslow. But other than that, the Isaiah Thomas trade, he bought low. The Jay Crowder trade, they targeted a guy who just needed an opportunity. You know, he's had a lot of these trades where he's gotten guys who maybe they didn't know Thomas was going to be as good as he was. Maybe they didn't know Crowder was going to grow into their second best player so quickly. But they targeted guys that they knew were ready for bigger opportunities. And I don't know whether they see that in Shabazz Muhammad. I don't know how much interest they have in Shabazz Muhammad. But guys like that, guys that we don't really think about. Like Thomas last year, it was like everyone was talking about Goran Dragic. And then Thomas was like kind of the afterthought on the Suns. Like, and you look at it a year later, Thomas is an all-star. Dragic is completely underperforming for Miami. And it's like, man, Danny Ainge did it again. So guys like that, Shabazz Muhammad, are kind of interesting. Those are the intriguing guys that they could like maybe take a flyer on and see what happens. But yeah, I think they'll look maybe for better players in Muhammad, but guys like that are interesting. The lesser known guys that maybe need more of an opportunity and can do some things well. Muhammad gets to the free throw line. He's a good post up player. He's a pretty efficient scorer for his usage rate. He does some things well. So guys like that, like who can already do things at the NBA level and maybe just need someone to highlight their strengths. Those are the interesting guys to me, because I don't know if there's any star that's going to become available, but there will be guys like that available if Ainge can find the right ones.
Yeah, Muhammad is a real interesting guy because last year he averaged like 13 points and he shot almost 40% from three. And this year he's a little more disappointing as far as Minnesota is concerned, but it's a great point because this is his third year, and Minnesota's already picked up his option, so he's under control. It's not like he's going to go away. The Celtics have an opportunity to buy low and keep control and kind of bring him along and who knows what he becomes. That would be an amazing. At what point do other GMs say, oh, who's on the phone? Danny Ainge? Nah, screw that. I'm not talking to that guy anymore. Because
these deals. Ainge wants Muhammad. Like, we better keep him, man.
Right. Ainge made these deals where at the time he deals Rondo to Dallas. And basically the consensus at the time was, yeah, I guess you got to get what you can. You probably should have gotten more, but we'll take it. And all of a sudden it turns into Jay Crowder and everybody's like, everybody wants like five Jay Crowders on their team. And, you know, Rondo's having a little bit of a resurgence, but all of a sudden Danny looks like the huge winner in that deal. How does that, I don't know how that keeps happening. And beyond that.
Well, I'll tell you what doesn't hurt is Brad Stevens, who utilizes this guy's strengths. So some of those deals might not look quite so good without Stevens highlighting guys. Like Evan Turner signed him basically off the garbage heap. Nobody wanted Evan Turner after the half season he had in Indiana. And then Celtics swoop in, and now he's become a really valuable bench player for them who can do a lot of things. And so I think a lot of the credit does go to Stevens for utilizing guys well and to his coaching staff for really developing these players. These are all young guys who just keep getting better. You look up and down that roster, guys are improving. You know, Marcus Smart shows stretches where he's fantastic. By the way, his rebound at the end of regulation, where he spun around, who was it, Wesley Johnson? I mean.
Oh, Marcus Smart?
Yeah. He ended up boxing out Wesley Johnson. When he wasn't, he didn't have the position. He spun around him, boxed him out, got the rebound, drew a foul. That was just outrageous. He's had two huge, huge offensive rebounds, or in the case of the Cleveland game, tipped it off Mozgov, where Celtics would have lost the game otherwise, and instead they beat the Cavaliers and they beat the Clippers because Marcus Smart, a 6'3 guard, found a way to get an offensive rebound and save possession for the Celtics. Just outrageous hustle plays. But my bigger point is guys are developing. Solinger, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, everybody, Evan Turner, everybody, Kelly Olynyk, everybody's getting better. And I think a lot of the credit goes to the players because they have assembled a group of hardworking guys. And a lot of it goes to the coaches who develop those guys every game. If you look before game, Jay Hunter and James Young, those guys aren't playing a lot. They're out there working on their handles. You should see Jay Larinaga, their assistant coach, playing defense on these guys. They're double teaming RJ Hunter, and it's like Jay Larinaga and Kenny Graves, who's he used to be their video coordinator. I'm not sure exactly what his title is now. They're double teaming him, and they're like dripping sweat, like making sure he gets the most out of the workout, and that work matters. So kudos to them for developing all these guys, and kudos to Ainge for finding guys who are ready for that opportunity and want to work to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, look, we've been gushing for a little while. Let's get some questions.
Let's gush. It's a time to gush.
This is great. No, this is great. But we're going to continue doing this. So Victor asks, do you think we can be division champions? We talked a little bit about the Raptors. The Celtics are 4.5 games out. They're 5 games out in the loss column. Can the Celtics catch up to Toronto and take over basically the second seed in the East?
It's possible, but I doubt it happens. I mean, we're 27 games left. So to catch up on 4.5 games, the Celtics would have to go 18-9 or whatever, and the Raptors would have to go about 500. That doesn't seem very realistic given how well the Raptors have been playing. So, no, I don't think they catch the Raptors are really good this year. DeMar DeRozan has gotten better than I ever anticipated. Kyle Lowry, really, really good. Those guys are a tough, tough 1-2 punch. That team's a good team.
Yeah. The only thing I think the Celtics can hope for is and you don't want to hope for an injury, but it's something to happen that derails their momentum. So I agree. It's too late in the season to be making runs like that against the team if you're both at full strength.
Yeah, I think the three seed is their ceiling right now.
Yeah, I agree, and that's probably a good place to be, because if you're the three seed and you win that first round playoff series, then you get to avoid the Cavaliers in the second round. So I still think that the Celtics might not get past the second round, but you keep that three seed, and they're basically anything can happen until you meet a Cavaliers team. So, all right. At Old School Film, spelled with a K, with the emphasis on the perimeter three-point scoring today, is the Celtics perimeter defense today's equivalent of a rim protector? Interesting question. In a way, but if you can say that you're protecting the rim by not letting guys get to the rim, although, you know, there's only so much you can do, even with the guys that they have, because of the NBA rules. Some guys are going to get to the rim, like we were just talking about Toronto. DeMar DeRozan seems to get to the rim at will against, well, a lot of teams, but the Celtics especially. So, yeah, if you can prevent a team from getting to the rim, that is, in a way, rim protection. But I think you still need somebody in the middle to kind of at least stop the easier shots at the rim. And it doesn't even have to be with a DeAndre Jordan. He didn't protect the rim against Isaiah Thomas last night. Hey-o! But the Celtics have been protecting the rim fairly well with Jared Sullinger and Amir Johnson. So, yeah, I don't know. That seems like a pretty much a non-answer for me.
Yeah, I mean,
sort of in a way, kind of.
I will say this. Their perimeter defense helps make up for the fact that they don't have that guy.
Yes.
You know, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Jay Crowder, those guys are just elite defenders, and they keep people out of the lane. And a lot of them have versatility to guard different types of players. They force turnovers. They really, really create a lot of commotion, and kind of they can hide some of the deficiencies of those front court guys. And I think some of the front court guys, especially Sullinger, Johnson, I think Olynyk has done a better job than people realize too. They've done a pretty good job defensively too, but their defense is built upon those perimeter guys and their talents, and they're just really, really good defenders, those three, and that helps everybody. So it's not rim protection, but it helps hide the fact that they don't have rim protection, or as much rim protection as maybe you would want.
I feel uncomfortable with the amount of times we've been saying rim protection.
Sorry, John. We won't mention it again.
Magnus asks, if you had to try to win, which Celtics would you nominate for the All-Star Game dunk and three-point contests? So if you're sending a representative to go try to win the dunk contest and the three-point contest, which Celtics would we choose?
You'd have to pick Olynyk for the three-point contest, right? Maybe Avery Bradley?
I think so. Bradley, I think, jumps too much. Those guys who really jump on their jump shots tend to fade in the 3-point contest.
Okay.
I think Kelly's the type of guy who barely gets off the ground when he shoots to work well in that contest. So yeah, Olynyk, I think, for three.
And then, dunk contest is a tough question, because they don't have many dunkers on the Celtics roster.
Terry Rozier. Okay.
I think Terry Rozier could surprise people with some freakish dunks. He is a real top-notch athlete. Not that he would ever get invited to the dunk contest, but I think I would take him over anyone else on the Celtics roster. Just based on sheer athleticism, I don't think I've ever seen him, like, his creativity or anything like that. Obviously, creativity is huge in a dunk contest. But who else on their team.
I'm going to go with a way out there answer. Isaiah Thomas. Who can dunk.
We're going with the guy. Has he ever dunked in an NBA game? One time, John?
I don't know, but I've seen him dunk in warm-ups.
What kind of dunks have you seen in warm-ups from Isaiah Thomas, John?
We'll Google it. I know I've seen Isaiah Thomas dunk.
Yeah, like normal dunks.
Here's the thing. He's 5'9". Spud Webb won the contest, and he didn't throw down anything massively spectacular.
Yeah, but he went, what do you go, two hands between his legs? You think Isaiah Thomas could approach that? I don't know. Terry Rozier got my vote.
Let's look at this from a realistic perspective. No Celtics are winning the goddamn dunk contest. So
I think they should throw Sullinger in there and see what happens.
Yeah, or throw Evan Turner in there and watch him do something goofy. But
hey, he had that 360 earlier in the year.
I tell you what, you know, Avery Bradley might not be so bad. He has some insane follow dunks. Like, I think he could. I went with Isaiah Thomas because I'm like, he can dunk, but he's so small that just dunking would get him points because he would look so good. And he could probably do some crazy stuff, lobbing the ball and catching stuff. But I'm trying to go outside the box here, man. I'm trying to get creative.
Bradley might be their top athlete as far as leaping ability
Bradley's
goes.
Had some crazy dunks. He can get up there.
That dunk against San Antonio, that was
crazy.
That was huge.
Yeah. So I think he might be the guy, actually, because he's got the nice combination of being small, but he can get up there. So, all right, I'll go with Avery Bradley then.
I feel like he wouldn't. For some reason, I feel like he wouldn't have the creativity. I feel like he would just go in and dunk really hard. But whereas I feel
Bradley was in the dunk contest, he'd probably try to block other players' dunks.
He'd get down in a defensive stance.
He'd go out there and try to strip the ball as they were going up for dunks as a strategy to knock their scores down low enough where he can get in there.
But I mean, he might foul them. Watch out. He's starting a bad habit lately.
Bradley will be up 50 points and foul the guy on his last dunk.
We don't mean it, Avery. That was weird, though. The fouls were weird, weren't they? Like, he never does that, and he's just had Tony Allen type moments the last couple of games.
How often have you ever seen in the clutch, in the final seconds of a 2-point game, the final 1 second of a 2-point game, two fouls called to decide the game?
Crazy, and they were both obvious.
In half a second. Absolutely.
The refs couldn't have even swallowed the whistles if they wanted to.
It's just odd to see. Let's dig deep into the statistics here, the advanced statistics, because Josh Lawrence brings up a good one. Boston is 25-10 when they lose the opening tip, 7-13 when they win the opening tip. What is going on here, Jay?
My little brother's high school coach gives up the tip. He has their center, who is 6'7", which is huge in Western Massachusetts basketball. He has him not jump, and then they just go back and play defense and try to set the tone. So I always hate that because it's like giving up a possession. And I don't know if he listens to this podcast, but if he does, I hate that, Murph.
You son of a bitch.
Get the ball and go score. But maybe Brad should do it. You know, the stats show 25-10. You can't argue the advanced statistics of jump ballness. And I don't know. I think Amir Johnson, someone tweeted me that he's bad at jump balls. So it might be part of it. I don't know. Who knows? 25-10 though. It's probably David Lee's fault.
And the final thing on Twitter comes from Sam Packard, who says, Jay, your career has the momentum of a runaway freight train. What makes you so popular?
He told me that was a Simpsons reference.
It is. I gotta find the Lisa Simpson, because she reads
what
Mr. Burns. You're Mr. Burns in this scenario. Not that that means anything.
I know who Mr. Burns is.
Okay, great. He's running for office, and she reads a scripted question. It's very topical. It's almost like a Donald Trump joke, except it's a Jay King joke.
Yeah, but I don't think I want to be compared to Trump.
But your career does seem to have the momentum of a runaway freight train.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
I mean, you've got this podcast.
Well, we do have the podcast. The podcast is like three runaway freight trains. Nobody's going to stop this thing. But as for my career, that no. No. Sadly, no. I like the Simpsons reference that he knew I wasn't going to get. He tweeted me that knowing I wasn't going to get it.
Yep.
And I knew it.
I think it's become a thing. We had a big blow up this week over at Twitter about Simpsons reference. Well, because Sam asked me a Simpsons question and I dove into it like nylon calculus dives into basketball statistics. He asked me,
I didn't know where you were going there, but you saved yourself. I don't think you knew where you were going there either, but you pulled one out of your butt.
I got it. I made it.
Yeah, it was nice work.
Very Evan Turner-ish, but I did it. He asked me what the best five-episode run of The Simpsons was, and I just dove into it, and I gave him like a five-tweet answer, and that led to us just all shitting on you for not being a Simpsons fan. And so now I think it's become a thing. Whenever we can throw references that you don't understand, it's basically going to happen.
I still say grown men don't watch cartoon shows. Grown men watch Boy Meets World. That's what I have always said. That's what I will always say. So, Boy Meets World. Give me a Boy Meets World reference and I'll know everyone. Everyone.
I'm letting you hang out there because this isn't helping you at all.
You don't watch Boy Meets World. You never did you?
You're
heartless. I knew it.
I never did.
That's up there. That's in my top three shows ever.
Okay.
The Wire, Friday Night Lights, and Boy Meets World.
Okay.
Yeah. Simpsons.
That's a hell of a top three considering all the great TV that's out there. That's a hell of a top three.
What's your top three?
We've
officially gone off the rails, but I want to hear your top three now.
Top three TV shows of all time. Shoot. Seinfeld. The Simpsons. And Arrested Development.
Yeah.
All sitcoms.
Yeah.
Because I'm very immature.
See, I mean, to say that it's crazy to have my top three, you can disagree with it, but to say it's crazy is crazy.
Have you ever watched Arrested Development?
I love Arrested Development, actually. That's a great show.
All right. Common ground. The show is saved.
Yes. Arrested Development. The Bluths. Gotta love the Bluths.
Okay. Well, I think this is a good place to end.
Gotta love the Bluths.
This is a rant-free episode.
Gotta love the Bluths. Gotta love Evan Turner. And that's the show.
That is the show. The Celtics go into the All-Star break. The third seed in the NBA. 32-23. Going down the stretch. What's going to happen next week? What's going to happen in the All-Star game? We're going to talk to you after the All-Star game. Please, if you listen to us on iTunes, go give us a rating. It boosts our ego immensely.
Preferably a good rating.
A good rating, yeah. Don't give us a bad rating. Give us a 5-star rating. Seriously, do it now.
After hearing the TV talk, people might give us a bad rating, man. We just got off the rails.
We'll edit it out. Nah, I'm too lazy to do that. This is all Stan. We'll see you next time on the Ray and Jay's podcast.